call. It's always a little bit weird recording just like an intro on its own that we've recorded separately. But that does mean, of course, that for the Wiki Weekdays podcast this week, we are joined by a special guest.
We are indeed, yes. So, this week's special guest, or this month's special guest, I should say, is a good friend of mine who I've worked with for in excess of a decade now. And that person is Davin Hiskey. And the name may not be familiar, but the site that they founded certainly will be. Today I found out. And today I found out is when I cut my teeth as a researcher, writer, and script editor. And like during the course of the conversation you're about to listen to, you can hear me realize in real time, oh God, I've been doing this for a decade.
Yeah, and I just want to mention that right now, the pre-recorded intro bit, Carl's looking a little bit blurry, but, you know, a little bit blurry on my Discord right now.
Okay, because I think it's more just blurrier.
Like the Discord.
I can grow blurrier, Lucas.
Being a problem. Is still keeping you quite blurry, but like in the actual video, Carl looks fine, and
yes,
you know, for the majority of it, he will be less blurry, Carl. But yes, we will also have like less blurry Davin, who like when we recorded also had some Discord problems and ended up like recording on their iPad for the video, but then like having their computer separate and stuff. So like the setup might seem a bit jank, but like that was the only way they could get their video working at the time.
But the audio should be fine. But it is amusing because throughout the course of the video, we talk about various things inspired by the wiki I brought to the table of Area 51. And it dawned on me about halfway through that recording session, we've got a dude with a beard talking about conspiracy theories into a poorly positioned camera. this could have very different vibes if not for the fact that Davin actually knows what he's doing and has been a researcher for longer than I've been writing online. So that's the thing to establish about Davin, like the founder of the site Today I Found Out, which if you're not familiar with it, you're no doubt familiar with the work of the person who similarly cut their teeth there, Mr. Simon Whistler.
Yeah, that's the thing, is like obviously people associate the person on camera with the channel, and that is, or was for the longest time. I can't remember if they still are they on
Simon Whistler still presents videos, but Davin has been similarly presenting them and doing their own research and original content for the site, which I'd recommend people go look out for. But if you want to go see like early young Carl, or at least like my voice, the written voice I should say, you can go check out some of like the older videos that I wrote the scripts for, which include the video on what happens if you land on free parking in Monopoly.
Right.
It was one of their earliest viral videos. And that's where I got the first taste, the first lick of that brass ring. It's like, hey, this YouTube malarkey can make some decent money.
And the answer is that for a lot of people...
Don't say the answer.
No, I was going to say for a lot of people, the answer is different than what you might expect.
It is indeed, yes.
But yes, you will see essentially like 2/3 of the like working horse parts of Today I Found Out within that pod, like our current podcast that we're about to intro into. But just the fact that it's like, hey, yeah, you might not have realized that a lot of Today I Found Out was like Carl and Davin behind the scenes and Simon being on camera. And just that's the way things work, right? It's just, yeah.
Yeah. And like I said, it's, you get to see or listen to, if you listen to it after the fact, just in real time, me realise how fucking old I am.
God, you're not that old, it's fine. But you've been doing this for a long time, and so has Davin, and I would recommend that, you know, if you enjoy the upcoming podcast with Davin, that you go check out all the links we've put in the description to go check out all of their content and just go support them as well.
Yeah, like I said, one of the people responsible for, like, if you're watching this video right now and you found Wiki Weekends via FactFiend, then you owe Davin at the very least like the benefit of giving him a view, clicking on the links you find below, because if there was no Davin, there'd be no FactFiend.
Yeah, and one of the bigger kind of surges that FactFiend got to begin with was a little plug from Today I Found Out, right?
Yes, and Top Tens. That was run by a different person who's unfortunately no longer with us.
Right, okay, fair enough. And just, yeah, we've got, like, somewhat... It was Eric from last month that was from Top Tens as well, right?
Yeah. I wasn't involved with that. So basically just these these guest episodes so far have just been, hey, these are people that I know from the industry, and they work behind the scenes, which I think is the most interesting part, because that's the part of the industry, the part of like YouTube and content creation that is seldom discussed. So it's the part that I find most fascinating myself.
And don't worry, we are trying to collaborate with people who are on the more forward-facing side as well. We've already done one collaborative podcast, so that's a little tease for next month, probably.
But we can't talk too much about that, because we don't want to block Dave and Shine.
Exactly, yeah. We like to make sure that we only focus on the like guest at the time. Apart from Cole, just one other thing that we have to mention, and that is that a band has reached out to us.
Yeah, you told me this, right? You were just like, hey, Cole, there's a band who reached out and was like, what? So what's going on?
So there's a band called Sons of Gulliver. They're over in America, and they just sent us an email and was like, hey, we're going to be like doing some dates soon, some performances that we'd like to get a shout out. I was like, okay, cool. Like, how soon is it? It's like, oh, the beginning of April. It's like, oh, okay, let's get this sorted. And they're just like, hey, we've done most of like the planning and marketing and everything we need to, but we're just fans of Wiki Weekends, wanted to reach out, get a bit of a shout out. So it's like, hey, that's absolutely fine. And they're a two-person bass and drum duo that are like desert rock vibes, because I don't want to say drum and bass because that will imply the wrong thing. So they're like kind of gritty, crunchy desert rock, not drum and bass.
Okay, but there is a bassist and a drummer.
They play bass and drums. And that is their setup. But they are, as I mentioned, they are Sons of Gulliver, and they are doing some dates over in America. So the 10th of April, they're doing No Dice in New Orleans, Louisiana.
It's actually pronounced New Orleans.
Sorry?
It's pronounced New Orleans.
Well, I don't know, Carl. I'm doing my best.
New Orleans.
But on the 11th of April, they will be at the Sunflower Oven in Jackson, Mississippi. On the 12th of April, they'll be at For the Record Music Hall in Florence, Alabama. And then the 13th of April, they'll be in Cobra in Nashville, Tennessee. So if any of that sounds like, you know, appealing, go check out the music on the links in the description as well. And shout out. Just a fan reaching out being like, hey, we make music. We want to just get a quick shout out. And yeah, hope it all goes well.
Yeah, I also like Tennessee sets you up for like one of the best shout lines. Like, are you from America, specifically the South of America? Why? Because you're the only 10 that I see. And Lucas, that's a bad joke. So tell us about the pet of the week.
Well, I was going to mention my favourite one of those like bad jokey ones.
Okay,
is like,
go for it.
The one that I saw that was a trend going around on TikTok not that long ago. But he's just like that, oh, hey, my friend thinks that he's cute, point over there, and then like instantly sprint over to that spot that you've pointed to and sit on the wall, like, yeah.
I think I say, like, there's the other good one of when you just say, like, oh, do you want to come out tonight? Oh, I've got to ask my friend. And it's just like this in a picture of their dog. It's like they say, no, sorry. Ultimately, the one of just like, hey, I wanted to ask you out on a date. And it's like a group chat. And it's like, who's that other guy? Oh, he's just here for moral support. And it's like, do your thinking.
Or like the Nathan Fielder joke, right? Of like, hey, look at me enjoying myself at my party with my friends who are totally here they're just off screen. Don't worry about it.
Too. Oh, we'll have to talk about Nathan Fielder on an episode one day, because, man, that is a career and a half.
That is certainly. And a career and a half as well for the pet of the week, Caster, who really needs those snacks. I mean, the reports. And so, it appears as though Caster is an emotional support dog that they're able to bring into work, but it kind of looks in the picture like Caster needs emotional support.
Yeah, so seriously, if I had an emotional support dog that looked at me with those like those baby blues, I'd start crying at work.
It's like, Caster's like, please, I need more snacks.
Yes, and if anyone out there is wondering, wait, what's pet of the week? That is a fun gimmick myself and Lucas like to do each and every podcast that we record, where our fans who subscribe to us on Patreon can submit pictures of their pets, family friends, pets, dogs they see on the street, pigeons that flew past their window and managed to get a photo of. Submit them in our Discord, found link below, and our fans will vote on which one they think is funniest.
As long as it is like a cute or funny picture of an animal, then it's likely to do well, right?
Like I said, the blurrier the better.
And this one is like a nice high-res picture, but I do like the way that it's framed within like the recording on the screen of just Caster just like looking up at the little bomb below. Just,
yeah,
you can't see it right now. You can't see how framed it, but it's the same as it's normally framed, and it's just a cute little like head popping up from the bottom of the screen. But
I feel like I want to get it as like a PNG and just put it at the side of the screen, right?
Well, it will be at the side of the screen in a minute when we get to our guest like podcast section, which will be just the majority, right? Where we just, as you mentioned, we talked about Area 51, kind of, and got into weird conspiracy theory mode.
But good conspiracy theories. It's not us going like, they're turning the frogs gay.
We might have made a reference to that at some point.
But we don't, we're not talking about if we believe it.
We weren't taking that one seriously. We were mostly, I think, bringing conspiracy theories into the mix to take the piss out of people that take conspiracy theories really seriously.
Not to mention some of the more popular articles and scripts I've written for Daven in the past concern debunking specific conspiracy theories. For example, one of my I went up and looked it up after the fact to remind myself of like the details of the moon landing conspiracy theory, where the guy who started the moon landing conspiracy theory in earnest is just a guy who's like, I smelled a rat that day. And that was it. Yeah. That was enough. And just to this one day, guy's like, nah.
It's like, just to this day, one of the most prevalent conspiracy theories, to the point where like a lot of people worldwide just do not believe anyone's ever been on the moon.
Yeah, a quantifiable percentage of people out there believe it to be fake. And we talk about reasons why and the various ways it can be debunked. But just the fact that that was started by one guy just being like, no, not today, is, as we discussed, like, kind of terrifying. That was one person being a fucking idiot who doesn't understand how science works can irreparably change the course of human history and knowledge. But also it's kind of commendable that one person can make a difference. It's just that difference is bad.
Yeah, true, true. But anyway, we'll stop babbling about what's in the episode and we'll just send you over to past Carl and Lucas where we get to watch it ourselves, and also you'll get to watch it too. So yeah, I hope you all enjoy it.
Thank you. Over to you, past Carl, even though in the podcast I refer to us as future Carl. Right?
You normally get it the wrong way around and say that, like, past us recorded it, but we're the future us. Anyway.
It's too confusing, right?
Go listen to the podcast and enjoy.
And thank you very much to everyone supporting us. Go check out Patreon, because the next thing we get, right, Lucas, is going to be, we're only a little bit away from our next, like, stated goal on Patreon, which will be in-person recordings.
That's true. Just between Carl and ourselves, I presume guests most likely won't be in-person recordings for the foreseeable future.
Unless they happen to be nearby.
Unless, yeah, we just so happen to be talking to a local creator, to one of us. But other than that, yeah, we'll let you go.
Yeah.
Go and see past Carl and Lucas enjoying themselves.
Over to you, me. Oh, so thank you to Carl from the past for... No, the future, right? We'll record the intro in the future. So thank you to Carl from the future for introing into this special podcast with our special guest, Daven Hiskey of Today I Found Out. And yeah, that is it. I was thinking, is your website called something else? And I have the name of the website in front of me. I don't know why I had that brain fart. But Daven Hiskey of Today I Found Out and many other places online.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the thing is... I'm familiar with Today I Found Out, and I've like even watched some of the articles that like Carl has worked on and then got into videos and stuff. So just let us know what Today I Found Out is if people don't know, and just any other places people can find you on the internet, because I'm not necessarily familiar with everywhere you are at.
Yeah, we got Highlight History is another one we do a podcast on that's very similar to this format, just history topics. And then, Today I Found Out is the main thing. Writing a book at the moment as well on the side. But fun fact, the Today I Found Out channel, though, Carl's stuff was the first stuff to blow up, his scripts to blow up and kind of make the channel blow up after like 500 videos we had done at that point.
Oh, yeah.
And finally, I don't know, it was like 2 years or something like that, just posting daily. And then, some of his stuff on, like, I think the first one was the Juicy Fruit Gum one, where, like, what's the juice in Juicy Fruit that you wrote? That one did pretty
that would be like a really early one, that, yes. And a weird coincidence there is that Wiki Weekends kind of owes its existence to those videos going viral, because those videos going viral inspired me to start Fact Fiend, and Wiki Weekends is itself a spin-off of Fact Fiend. It's an idea that started on there. So that working relationship we had like over a decade ago now has now resulted in just offshoots of offshoots working together. And it's amazing how the internet can work out like that sometimes, right? Just when I was looking up old articles to use as a reference point, it's like, oh, 2013, oh, I've been doing this that long. And I'm guessing you've been doing it a lot longer than I have, David, because you've been doing this easily since a couple of years before that, right?
Yeah, like 2009. And then the weird thing there too was like you got your start, I think, on Top Tens, was it? Similar. And then Simon Whistler emailed both me and the owner of Top Tens independently and started working with us independently, but didn't know like we knew each other. And then, yeah, it's all kind of interconnected.
It's one of those like strange like just connections between, isn't it? Because then Simon Whistler, as you mentioned, ended up hosting videos for yourself and for Top Tens.
Yeah, and jumped off from there. He's got like a million now.
he's everywhere, right? It's like every time I look at a new channel, it's like, is that one of Simon's? And I click it, and it's like, yeah, it's one of Simon's. So the topic we've brought forward for discussion today, David, is one inspired by an article. Is it one that you wrote or researched, or one that you wanted to promote? And it's about does the US government have a plan if aliens invade?
Or any government. Does anybody have a plan if an aliens invade?
And is that an article you wrote, you researched, you suggested?
Yeah, I wrote about 80% of it. Actually, about 20% of it was pulled from something you wrote. I believe it was you on the how we all pronounce UFO wrong. It's the original Project Blue Book. Was it Edward J. Ruppelt? He actually suggested, because everyone's just saying flying saucer back then, and he suggested it should be a UFO, but he pronounced it UFO.
Yes, he didn't pronounce it UFO. He didn't spell it out. And that's also I think that's the article I wrote about how everyone pictures flying saucers wrong, because he didn't describe the craft he saw as looking like a saucer. He described it as moving like one, like a saucer skipped, but he described it as being cigar-shaped.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing about that one is he was tasked with it because the government at the time in the 1940s was trying to investigate, because there would be these reports of these unidentified flying objects or whatever. And so they assigned a task force to it. I think it was Project Grudge, and there was another one. But the problem was that everyone involved in it wasn't really taking it seriously, so they weren't actually investigating. They were just kind of like, just coming up with stuff off the top of their head. But the military brass actually wanted to know, and U.S. Congress wanted to know, is there actually any validity to any of these? So they ended up bringing in Ruppelt, because he was just really good organizer, good management of people, and to take it, they wanted him to actually take it seriously. They gave him top secret clearance. He could ask, he could interview anybody involved, look at all the records, and just to see, because, of course, like, there's always that trope that the government would hide everything from the people, and like they don't want people to know, but at the same time, like, they live here too, so if there's aliens coming, you know, it's to their benefit to say, really to tell people, because then you can just get all the money for defense, all that, like it was unlimited check. Everyone would be like, yes, here's like unlimited money to try to figure this out, and to defend Earth. So they wanted him to take it seriously. He did it. I think it was about a decade of research on it, about 12,000 instances he investigated. And it was just, no, he found nothing basically. And all that stuff is available online. There's like 100,000 pages of him and his team's investigation.
Yeah, and I've read through not all of it, but like, you know, chunks of it for research I've done for you in the past. So people unfamiliar with Today I Found Out, as one of the people who used to write for them and research for them, it's sometimes it's just writing interesting articles, but other times asking or answering questions from like fans and just people who are interested. And the question that I answered like years and years and years ago now in 2013, that was released on July 16th of that year, was, why is Area 51 thought by some to house aliens? And I found that to be an interesting question, because I'd never actually considered that. I just always assumed that, well, Area 51, aliens, it kind of, yeah, that's a thing. But then the beauty of Today I Found Out is, but why is it a thing?
Yeah, I don't know the origins, but that's an association that has been existent before we were even born. Like, the whole, like, you know, Roswell incident, whatever that even is, I don't particularly know, but again, I know about it through, like, pop culture osmosis and stuff. Like,
yeah.
And as somebody who definitely believes in aliens, in the idea of, like, I believe that there are other life forms on other planets somewhere in the existent universe, but, like, maybe not in, like, UFOs and whatever, because especially in America, I'm very much in the belief of, like, Donald Trump would have spoke about it at this point, right?
They would have known, like, there's no way they'd be able to keep those aliens secret. Also, they'd probably shot one down.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's just one of the things I found so fascinating about writing and researching for today. I found out is getting to answer questions that I'd never thought to ask before. Like, for example, like, why do we think aliens are in Area 51? For anyone curious, I have the article up in front of me now because I don't recall stuff I wrote over 12 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's all down to an interview with one guy called Robert Lazar from 1989, where he just went onto a TV station in Las Vegas, told everyone he was a scientist. He wasn't a scientist. And just on air said, there's aliens in Area 51. And that was it. And that guy, all his credentials got pulled apart. No, like, every school we said he studied at said they never heard of him. And that was fascinating to me. Of one guy went onto TV 40 years ago, and now it is synonymous in pop culture, like Area 51 and aliens are the one and the same. And just prior to him, it was like 40 straight years of just Area 51 being a thing that the government acknowledged and then sometimes didn't. Mm-hmm. But no one thought aliens were there until one guy said it on the news.
It's very similar to the story that I think we covered on Fact Fiend of the guys who made crop circles.
Yeah, which I also wrote about today. I found out.
Oh, right. Just, okay, yeah.
Like, two just English dudes got drunk in a field one evening and just went out and just pushed wheat over with some poles. And again, that was fascinating when I researched that.
Yeah, that's also similar to the faked moon landing thing that was all kind of
that
most,
was
the
so
whole
fun.
Conspiracy, all just kind of one guy who had no real credentials and he just would write
feeling.
Random stuff. Yeah, and the stuff he was coming up with was so bizarre. If people would actually go back and read his original book, it was just contradictory. Yeah, all the time. And yeah, just that guy, and then it blew up from there. And now, actually, fascinatingly, there was I can't remember the exact statistics, but in Britain, they were polling, and teens today, actually, there's more of them that believe we didn't land on the moon than do, and that's actually going up over the years rather than going down.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is actually something I nearly brought up to Carl before recording, but I literally yesterday in work had that conversation come up, where, like, half of the people we were having a conversation with didn't believe that anyone had ever landed on the moon, and it was all a lie. And I was like, oh, this is really prevalent still.
And, yeah, I many, many years ago now for Daven, researched and wrote an article about where that came from. And as you mentioned, it was one guy, and some of the details that still live rent-free in my head is the fact that he claims in the book that he wrote before he changed the book, because of course he changed the book when it got popular, even though the official story from NASA has never changed, but he changed his story all the time. He claimed, like, Buzz Aldrin was just walking around Las Vegas getting pissed. And, like, he got in a fist fight with a barmaid who's never, ever given any sort of, no one knows she exists. And he somehow knew what they catered at the event. Like, he claimed in his book that they had cheese sandwiches. It's like, how does he know about the catering?
Yeah, so many of his details were like that. It was like, how would you possibly know that? Like the cheese sandwiches and things.
And it's one of those cases where as soon as you read it, you can tell it's complete bullshit because you're only adding these extraneous details to make it sound like you know more than you do. But just for example, how do you know what they catered at the super secret event that no one else in the world is, like, familiar with except for you?
That thing of, like, people who are lying keep adding on those extraneous details to try and cover themselves up. And it's that thing that I always think about is the one argument of, okay, but why would a country like Russia admit that America landed on the moon if they didn't?
Yeah.
Like, that was such a big deal at the time, and the space race was a thing. Why would they admit defeat publicly for no reason?
Well, they were tracking.
Also gone into.
They were tracking it at all, and that's what initially he said they didn't even go to space, as Carl said. But then because of the fact that, like, there was cameras on the rocket, you know, going to space. They were like, he changed his story later, and he said, well, they did go to space, but they just went into orbit, and they hung out there for a while, and then they came back.
And they came back.
But it is, it comes back to that, like, the Soviet Union would be all over that. They'd totally want to make fun of the U.S. and be like, oh, you guys just made all this up. But no, they tracked everything. Yeah. They were tracking everything as well.
Yeah, just it would have been like a slam dunk bit of propaganda for them. And that's one of the fascinating things about all the work I used to do for you in the past. Like, this, just like I said, the little details, such as the guy who claimed, like, the one guy is responsible for the moon landing conspiracy theories, but also just the silly detail of him knowing what they catered. For some reason, that always fascinated me. That, why add that detail?
Yeah.
Just, I still remember to this day that he said they had cheese sandwiches. It's like, how do you know? Or they got into a fist fight over a stripper. It's like, what? No.
Yep.
And yeah, the fact he said it was filmed in Area 51, because it's got to happen in Area 51. Even though Area 51 had nothing to do with aliens, it only exists. And that's what I think I linked back to the previous article I mentioned about, like, he specifically, like, singled out Area 51, even though Area 51 doesn't have rocket launching capabilities.
Yeah, if anything, at least, like, the moon landing section of it, you would film that in Hollywood, right?
Yeah, I think I put that joke in as well, the Kubrick joke about, like, Kubrick filmed it, but he like, filmed it on location because he's a stickler for detail. And, like, I think one more detail from that that, like, again, I was fascinated by is that the guy who wrote the book, his name escapes me, but it's one guy, is that he claimed they filmed the fake moon landing footage with a 10-second delay. And, like, that to me blew my mind of, like, how balls out confident were America to film that with, like, if one moth, one extra farting, one gust of wind, one car going past, one, like, person coming in with a cup of coffee, the entire ruse is done. A 10-second delay.
Well, and when you look at the way, like, the dust billows up and things on everything, it's just like, that can't happen on Earth, so it would have had to been special effects, but special effects back then to do that. Yeah.
And that's one of the fascinating things about some of the articles I've written for you in the past about debunking and exploring the origins of these conspiracy theories, because many people are familiar with them, but they may not be familiar with exactly how they got started. And we have covered that in the past, haven't we, Lucas, in regards to, like, Bigfoot, where Bigfoot was just... what, like, the Gimlin footage, I think it is, where it's just the guy who claims to have shot footage of Bigfoot is, like, on record as having, like, 3 failed Bigfoot movies and bought a gorilla costume in a costume shop 2 weeks before he shot the footage. And that's not suspicious.
We more recently covered Nessie as well, of, like, the Loch Ness Monster. The person who took the, like, picture, quote-unquote, literally admitted to it. And it's been like, no, that was just made up. It's not a real picture. And that's the most definitive proof we've ever had of the Loch Ness Monster.
And the guy who recorded it just went, no, it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
And in that vein, the topic I brought for conversation today kind of relates to both of these and all of these things is simply the Wikipedia page on Area 51. So I have to ask Dathan, does any government agency on Earth have a plan for if aliens invade?
No. And there's actually, you might say, well, oh, of course they're not going to admit to it. But at the same time, there's a lot of people who worked at these, and there's some people who worked at these agencies. There was one in Britain, the name escapes me, but he was a former employee of whatever thing, and he tried to push it. He was like, hey, we should at least, because while we can't plan ahead to know what their technology is and all that, we could at least put in place like treaties and stuff where, okay, we'll handle communication. These people will take this, you know, how we'll communicate and coordinate, at least get that squared, and then we'll react to the situation as possible. But nobody's really seems interested in that, other than there was one time during the Cold War, I can't remember which president, but he asked Soviet premier, and he said, hey, if aliens attacked us, would you help us out? And he was like, yeah. And would you help us out? And he was like, yeah. And then they made they kind of chuckled and were like, yeah, it's the one way we could work together. You know, it was the height of the Cold War and everything. And no one would care. But other than that, it was like, there's not really much you could plan for, because you don't know what the technology, you don't know what their strategy. And the fact we would lose, not because of technology, because you can have like primitive tribes. We've had, you know, tons of examples in history where you have a primitive tribe, you have a much superior, you know, force attacking them with way better weapons and all that. And the primitive tribe can actually do pretty well because, like, physics is still physics. You hit someone on the head, you know, with a stick, you're still going to do some damage.
They're going to go
down.
And
so you could think, but we would still lose because we can't touch them at their source. They don't even need to come attack us. They can just sit up there and throw stuff at us, or they could just be up there, study our biology, release a virus that kills, you know, everyone. They could release, maybe they're not subjected, they're not going to be harmed too much by ionizing radiation. They could just do that. All of it they could do at a place we can't touch them at all. They're just up there. And so there's nothing we could do. Even if they wanted to make it a fair fight and come down, even if we win, well, they're still up there. We can't touch them. They could just come back again. You know, like, there's just no way we could win until we could get to them at their source. They would just, it was only a matter of time, no matter what the technology or any of it.
I can see why the government's not investing in this, because the moment they admit we lose,
yeah. Like,
why are we bothering funding it then, right?
It does surprise me, though, that there isn't a plan out there for trying to at least negotiate peace, right? Like, you would think at the very least, like, okay, there's no way that we could beat them in a fight. As you say, like, even if we could, they could just be up there and come back. But the idea that we don't have a person in place or a plan in place for, like, these kind of people would negotiate with aliens if they arrived and could communicate with us is kind of, like, you would think that's a couple of days aside for a government of just, like, make sure we've at least got something written down.
I imagine there's someone at NASA who probably does it, right? Because I know communication, like, there is the long-range, like, bombardment we sent out, like, the Voyager probe and stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So imagine, is that something you covered in your research for it? Of, was there anything on the Voyager probe about, like, please don't attack us?
Well, that's the main strategy. And the fact that they would come to attack or annihilate doesn't really make a lot of sense, because if they want our resource, okay, so they're coming, they want to get rid of us. Do they want our resources? Because there's way better resources in our solar system they could go get. Mm-hmm. Like, on asteroids, it's much easier with metals and stuff, much easier accessible. Europa has more water than Earth, most likely. There's all these and much less gravity, so it'd presumably be easier for them to go get it, and they don't have to bother with us. Then there's the fact that they would probably, you know, like, okay, well, what if they want slave labor? And it's like, well, we've only been really harnessing electricity for a century, and we're already almost ready to make robots that, you know, with intelligent AI. So if they're actually an intergalactic species, they probably got some good robots. They don't need slave labor. And then on that point, they might not even be biological, because at some point they might have made the AI robot that then just took over, and then they're just robots. And then what do they need the Earth for, really? They don't need oxygen and things like this. So there's not really a reason to come unless they wanted to be, like, they're just... And they would probably be somewhat like us because of just the evolutionary path, where it's like you have to have a species that's going to work together to some extent, or they're not going to advance. So they have to have some sort of, like, yes, they probably were originally predators, because those are usually the smarter animals and stuff like that. But much like humans, where we can be aggressive, but it's not our default state per se, because we need to work together. Like, that's just a thing to advance a society. That's why we progress. And that's probably why they would progress too. So they'd probably be pretty similar in that way, whether their bodies or anything are completely different, who knows. But so when they're coming, why would they want to kill us necessarily? They might just want to say hi and study us. And if they want to study us, they don't even need to bother us with that. They can just be up there and they don't need to even say they're there. Maybe send a probe down, maybe capture a couple bodies or humans for study. But there's that. And then, I don't know, most of the reasons you can think of that a species like us would go, it's not to, like, annihilate the people. It might just be to get along or say, hey, or even maybe they're traveling through the stars and they need supplies, like, readily, where they don't want to, you know, get them in the asteroids. But there again, if they're doing that, they probably have the facility to do that without having to bother with, you know, a planet like ours where there's actually people on them. So it's, in most scenarios you'd think of, they're probably not coming to attack because there's just no real reason, unless they just want to get to know us. So we're probably safe. But to go back to your thing where it's like, yeah, our best strategy is just to be like, welcome, you know, like, hey, because we, you know, there's nothing much we could do. So let's just try for peace. Let's not be aggressive here.
Yeah, I do find it interesting that just we kind of stopped doing that at a certain point, because it was the space race kind of died down and people stopped really caring about space. I remember the statistic, like, people didn't know who Neil Armstrong was, like, 4 years after he went to the moon in polls, because just that kind of died down. But yeah, like, the Voyager probe's up there. There's a bunch of stuff on it, and it's Yeah, have we? I do wonder if we've ever sent, or if there's plans to send out a like updated version. Like, you know, our music taste back then wasn't very great.
It'd be a bunch of TikTok videos and stuff.
Oh, no. Maybe they send out, like, you know, a reflection of culture, like, similar to like a time capsule. Like burying something in the ground. If they were going to send like a snapshot, they probably would send something internet-based, because that's a snapshot of culture as it exists now. So I know they sent like a Chuck Berry song and a Beatles song, I believe.
Well, that's if they wanted to really come and study us. Again, they wouldn't even have to bother, you know, letting us know, because they could just tap into our internet and you know, they got all the details of anything they would ever want to know about us, including lots of detailed biology and all these things. They don't really, you know, there's not really need to
do
it.
There's a lot of details on biology you can find on the internet.
There is. It's just the fact these things exist and the best guess of like experts who presumably spend all their time thinking about it is just, don't worry about it. Which, oddly enough, is less reassuring. Just don't worry about it. It's either they're going to be friendly or they're going to kill us and there's nothing we can do about it, so why bother?
Why stress? Because, you know, either I die or they say, hey, do you want to, like, give us your phone and we'll research your phone for a while and you can have a robot body? I'm like, yeah, sign me up. Let's go.
I just figured there'd be, like, at least one government agent somewhere who's done it, like, with a rival. Even if just for the sake of just to know of how to communicate with a species that doesn't necessarily communicate the same way we do. Like, how would you get across that we're intelligent? Because of some of the methods that I've heard about is, one is you show them a right angle, because showing the right angle establishes that you understand math. Another one is like Morse code or something similar to Morse code in whatever type of way you can get that across, whether it be through radiation, light, sound, what have you. And just tap out like prime numbers is another one, which establishes that we understand like math and more complex math, which would denote intelligence.
Well, and then also you could do where I think it's Contact, they do this where they build up from that. They need to interpret our signals and vice versa. So you can start by counting, and then you could do, you know, you could kind of let them know what an equal sign is by putting the things on the two sides that are equal and then substituting in numbers. So they get it all down. And then once you got the full number system and all that, you can go far with that pretty quickly with building on language and stuff.
Yeah. Which is, I figured at least to be something like that, because just models to do that would be inordinately useful just for human interaction of, again, like just making communication easier. So I'm surprised there's not like anything like that popped up during your research. But we can jump now to the wiki page, and there is specifically a section just on UFO and other conspiracy theories. No, so do you happen to have any favorite conspiracy theories, either you guys? Because there's a lot when it comes to like Area 51. I just want to
put in before we go on to that subject. Do you want to just give a shout out to the film you mentioned, Arrival, of like, I could genuinely watch like a 20-hour cut of Arrival, of just the nuance of trying to think about how we would, you know, go about describing ourselves and our cultures and our languages to alien species. And obviously, like, we've had experiences with that in the past as a human species in terms of, like, you know, going to other countries and exploring and trying to communicate with people who speak entirely different languages. But man, that film is fascinating, and I wish it was even more dialed in on just the language and translation aspect. It's an excellent movie.
So that's why I figured there'd be like some scientists out there trying to figure it out, because, as I mentioned, the only thing I'm familiar with is establish that we understand what numbers are, because even if they don't communicate the same way as us, they would need to understand physics, even if their version of physics differs from our own, but like the constants of the universe remain the same in their calculations, whatever form they took. So if you establish that you understand what they are, that's how you get across that we're an intelligent species. Which I always found interesting. But do you happen to have any favorite Area 51 themed conspiracy theories? Because I have a list of them here. Wikipedia helpfully provides a list of the various conspiracy theories about Area 51.
I mean, I mentioned there's like the Roswell incident, right? But I don't necessarily know
apart,
that that's...
Right, Daven? That is an American, the geographer here. Roswell's like hundreds of miles away from where A-51's located.
I think so, Nevada. And Nevada is a whole lot of nothing. It's just desert. There's actually one point I've driven through there a ton. I lived there for a little while, too. There's one point there where it was 100 and some miles, which I don't know, what is that, like 180 kilometers, 200 kilometers between a gas station? Like just to get a gas. So you have to make sure there's actually signs that say like, hey, this is the next thing to gas station. So make sure you can make it to there. And it's just desert in between. There's nothing.
That's like the distance between Carl and I with like many, many, many towns, but like also multiple giant cities in between and stuff. And like,
yeah, America's big.
America's so big that it's hard to fathom sometimes.
It is. And the middle is just, the middle is, there's big cities here and there, but the middle is so much nothing. There's just not, you just drive endless nothing, maybe a house here or there, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's just a lot of nothing in the middle.
And there's so many places they could have gone from Roswell that aren't Area 51. Like, for example, there's an Area 52, which cracked me up. It was just an Area 52. But no one talks about it because it's not Area 51. And that'd be closer to Roswell, if, according to my research, if I'm remembering correctly from when I researched that article years ago.
When you look at the Area 51, it's 51 because it's 51. There's 50 others, before that. This is not a...
It is literally that. Okay.
It sounds simple, right? But at the same time, that's the kind of stuff like...
it's the only area I'd heard of.
Yeah. Well, they're saying, surprising.
It's not surprising that they were, people were seeing unidentified flying objects because they were testing like advanced military jets and stuff there at the time. So yeah, they're testing flying around things, and one of them crashes. Ooh. So yeah, not surprising. They're test, they're test pilots and test things. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And all the conspiracy theories you hear, that they're very easily explained away by, well, they're flying experimental top secret stuff there. Of course, it's going to crash every now and again. Of course, it moves in a way that doesn't reflect the movements of any known aircraft, because the aircraft are literally experimental. Of course, they're going to move in a different way because that's why they're making them.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's what the VTOL stuff, like the vertical takeoff stuff. Like that's things that are like beyond my own comprehension and really difficult to make and stuff that. Back in the day, we would think like, oh, that's not possible to exist.
And that's the kind of stuff they test. I have it here from the original article I wrote years ago, like the SR-71, which is like the thing that just flew so fast. It didn't need to have like an anti-being shot down system because it just outflew the missiles until they fell out of the sky. Which sounds like science fiction, right? Mm-hmm. If you'd have told people that like 40, 50 years ago when they were inventing it, like there's something, is this just mysterious like pure black piece of technology that's completely seamless and can fly faster than like anything else in the sky at the time, including the missiles we made to shoot down the things that fly there.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be completely inconceivable. You could imagine someone thinking that's an alien, or just
you can also see that like we nowadays with like the ubiquity of drones everywhere, even just off the shelf ones. And all of a sudden we see a huge spike in UFO sightings. And it's like, well, yeah, because everyone's flying drones. And the militaries of the world, they're doing their own advanced versions of things like that as well. And so, yeah, it's not surprising that all of a sudden there's just sightings everywhere of these random things.
Yeah, that's like something else, like during the research I've done in the past for articles dealing with these subjects is, the alien and UFO sightings always spike near US Air Force bases and stuff. It's like, it's kind of, you put two and two together there, but I do have the list of various UFO and other related conspiracies about Area 51 here. The storage, examination, and reverse engineering of crashed alien spacecrafts, including materials supposedly recovered at Roswell. And that's something they deal in like many movies, right? That's like Independence Day deal with that.
Yeah.
Where they just go in and there's just an alien there, and it's one of my favourite scenes in any movie dealing with aliens where they just shoot it. It's just so anticlimactic. Well, the fact that no one thought of doing that, where the alien tries Will to get Smith, the president.
Well, that's where like the coming back to like physics is physics. Will Smith punches one in the face and he knocks it out.
Yeah.
That's the moment I was going to mention. It's just Will Smith's like, I'm just going to punch it.
Because I've always wondered, like, do you think the aliens in that movie ever expected that? do you think that might be the first time one of those aliens has ever been punched in the face?
Well, even when you talk about their energy shield, that's where they're vulnerable. If they were to actually come down to Earth, like you can say, and their ships might have like a massive power source, but any sort of energy shield, if it even exists, anything you throw at it, presumably the energy it would have to use to defend against it would have to be approximately equal or more than what you're throwing. So if you throw a nuke at it, they have to have more of that on board. And so maybe they have that on their ship, but an alien walking around is not going to have that, you know, in a backpack or something. And so, and even if that attack style didn't work, well, they're walking on the ground, presumably, unless they're flying. So just blow something up in the ground and then they go flying up the air and see how high you have to shoot them up in the air before they die when they come back down.
Yeah.
There's just all sorts of ways we could attack them where the whole idea that they would just be so advanced we would have no chance, it doesn't really make sense because, again, we have so many examples in human history where primitive cultures are absolutely, they defend, or like the U.S. military will throw all our might at, you know, this country, and the country wins in the end by just, you know, insurgents outlasting us. It's just like, ah, this is getting too expensive or whatever. We're just going to leave. And it would be like the same strategies would presumably work against the very advanced alien culture. And we could, you know, observe their technologies and sort of adapt, try to figure out what they're doing and capture it and everything. So that side of it, I feel like we actually would have kind of a chance. It just the whole part that we'd have to be able to get them at their source again, going back, would be the thing.
Yeah, which is a lovely idea. Just punch them or shoot them. Like I said, the bit where just the president asks, is that glass bulletproof? And like, no. And they just shoot the alien and it dies and everyone's like, oh, we never thought of doing that.
Or the bit where they just upload a 90s computer virus to the mothership, right?
Yeah, I think that was an article years ago. I'm not sure if you ever got the idea off the ground. It was like movie commentary stuff, I believe. Like, I was researching potential scripts for that, and one was about Independence Day. And they actually explain that, because there's a deleted scene where you see Jeff Goldblum messing about with that floating ship in like Area 51 with his laptop, and you see him reverse engineer how to communicate with it.
And he realizes like, that the most important information of the entire movie.
Yeah, because it also explains how they figured out how to communicate with us, because Jeff Goldblum realizes, well, they figured out our way of communicating. Can we figure out theirs? And he connects to that ship, and that's how he develops the virus. And they thought, well, cut that. It doesn't matter.
Well, and then when you think about the virus there, it would have to be, some people are like, oh, it can never work because he would never be able to figure out, like, find a hole in their system. But the one sort of counter argument to that, and this is kind of a stretch to make the movie work, is that this is sort of like a hive society. So maybe it's not even on their radar to have any sort of defense against anything like that, because we all work together. We have our queen or whatever. And so we're all kind of, so we don't even think about that we would need to have some sort of like a firewall. Like, you could just upload random code and it crashes the whole system type of thing, which again, it's a bit of a stretch, but it's like the one way it could maybe work. He wouldn't have to know too much about their system, just upload random stuff that gets integrated in their system, and he figures out it makes the whole thing crash temporarily while it reboots or whatever is happening there.
Yeah. I remember that being explained away in a deleted scene. Well, that also makes perfect sense of, if they're a perfect hive mind where they all go towards the same goal, why would there be any sort of filter?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
exactly.
Ultimately as well, just like in terms of computer, like, obviously they would have to get some kind of code that would actually interact with whatever their interface is, where that deleted scene comes in. But the idea of just overloading a system is not the hardest thing to do. You can just get it to do a lot of things.
Or you can
it's
just
like, if you try to get secrets out of them or whatever, then that's a bit more difficult. But you're specifically just trying to make it overclock itself. It's not the hardest thing in the world.
Just spill coffee on it. Like, the amount of laptops, like that, like, you know, if you took a laptop back like 300 years and you showed that to a peasant, that's magic. That's alien technology. You can destroy it by spilling a cup of coffee on it, which I've done many times.
Yeah. Well, they did.
They did a good thing in the movie where they put the nuke inside the ship, because some people I've seen, like, why didn't they just hit it from the outside, and why did you have to have this complicated thing of flying inside? But it wouldn't actually be effective even if you had their mothership shield down from the outside in space, because nukes are really, I actually have an episode on this on Highlight History just a little bit ago.
Yep.
Nukes are a really bad weapon in space, because so much of the damage that it does is from, like, all the, you know, the hyperheating the atmosphere, the all these sorts of things that just isn't happening in space. It would just be like a brief little flash. Right. You would have a tiny bit of debris going everywhere, but it's not that much, you know, from the bomb itself. And then that's really all you're getting out of it. So but if you're inside where there's like an atmosphere and lots of debris and stuff, then that's going to be a really effective weapon. But yeah, just hitting an alien ship from the outside with a nuke is whatever. Even if they didn't have any good shielding per se, it's probably not going to do too much damage.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of, like, you know, if you get a can of Coke and you spill it on a car, that's one thing. But if you open up a can of Coke inside the car, that's too fizzy. And the driver gets on the driver, that car might crash.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's fascinating to think that, like, nukes, the damage done is more like thermodynamic than anything, right? Like, it's just...
It makes the atmosphere more sense to do it
within an atmosphere, which is something I've never thought about before. But
then the shockwave need atmospheres of that.
Yeah, the shockwave, even the EMP pulse in space wouldn't really happen. There's just not enough things. You need an atmosphere to make all of the damage that it does. And so on that episode in Highlight History, we're talking about, because they had that project where the U.S. was going to nuke the moon, and they hired Carl Sagan actually to tell, like, what would it look like. They just wanted to show, they wanted the world to be able to see it, because it was kind of like a space race Cold War thing. And it was that, like, you wouldn't really see much. Like, you might see a little cone of cloud, but it wouldn't be, like, spectacular like you would think from nuclear explosions on Earth. Really just be a little flash, maybe a little dust, maybe, like, nothing much. And it turns out, when we were looking at it, so the U.S. and the Soviet Union were trying to come up with, like, a military space station on the moon, and the Soviets was a moving one. The Earth was doing their own, doing tunnels and stuff like that. And so they also, the military, because it's military, they wanted to have a defense. So it turns out, very simple weapons, like even like a bow and arrow style weapon, would be much more effective in a lot of ways than a lot of the weapons we would think, or like a gun. And, like, they did have, the U.S. had those sort of handheld nuke things, but it wouldn't be that effective of a weapon. I just, that visual of, like, these little astronauts on both sides, one they're hopping along, loping along, trying to invade, and then the defenders. And I just think, at a certain point, if you're the astronauts up there, you're on the Soviet Union side, you're on the U.S. side, you're like, what are we doing, guys? Like, there's death all around us. Can we just come in and, like, have dinner or something?
Just as well, you feel so stupid, right? But it does lend credence to the theory, or, like, the way they do it in Dune. They talk about in Dune of, they get to a certain point of technology where guns don't work anymore, so you have to go all the way back around to using knives, because they have, like, the personal shields that are so advanced they'll stop all projectiles. It's like, but you can't stop a knife, because you need to breathe, so you need to let something in, so you can just walk up and stab you or punch you, and that's how Will Smith gets away with it. Like, that tactic of walking up and punching something, like, it's the Mike Tyson quote, everyone's got a plan until you punch him in the face. And I'm sure the aliens did until Will Smith... Like, so you see, the alien pops out to try and get him. Yeah. I bet he didn't expect Will Smith to land that right hook on it. It's great.
And I always wondered, you see Star Trek, The Next Generation, where they have these energy shields, and they're always shooting, like, phasers and stuff like that, or the Borg or whatever's coming, and they have their little energy shield in, but Worf can just punch them. So at what point do they... why not just, like, all right, let's replicate some old-style guns. Let's see what their shields do against that. Which they do address
that. It's in Star Wars. They talk about one of the deadliest weapons in the Star Wars universe, what they call, like, slug throwers. And they're essentially equivalent to our, like, firearms. And they say, like, they're really rare because they're, like, seen as being outdated. But the few planets that have them, Jedi don't go there, because when you try and block one of the bullets with a lightsaber, it just melts and turns into, like, searing hot glob of metal that flies through your chest.
So it's just molten shrapnel instead of shrapnel, right?
And just really talk about that. Just the idea of, you get to a certain point of technological advancement, and then old stuff starts to become more effective, because you can't... I remember when I wrote one about bulletproof vests, or bullet-resistant vests, to use the correct term, where if you want something to be bullet-resistant, it's not stab-proof, because it's different kinds of energy that it needs to stop. And I found that fascinating, that stab-proof vests aren't bulletproof and bulletproof vests aren't stab-proof.
Yeah, because they're just very specific designs that are doing one specific job, and they're doing that one job very well, but nothing else. And I do find the idea fascinating that, like, yeah, on the moon, just combustion of guns would not do anything. Like, there's no oxygen, but, like, a bow and arrow, if anything, would be more effective, as you say.
Just fly,
like,
for so long, wouldn't that be terrifying?
There's no air resistance, there's less gravity. It would be a way more effective weapon, but a gun would do nothing.
Yeah, or like an air-powered rifle or these sorts of things. You do have bullets that will have their own, you know, self-contained to create oxygen and everything like that. But yeah, just an air-powered rifle or something with a little something to cut their spacesuit would be super effective.
Yeah. Oh, it's a knife. Just walk up and just cut the spacesuit, right?
A little BB going on something.
That'd like, be great. Just... Big old like spacesuits, and they got their little samurai swords and going to town at each other.
But it does, like, you know, at the very least, it lends some credence to all those sci-fi universes where they go back to using melee weapons despite having access to lasers. Just at a certain point, it just becomes easier to walk up and guarantee that you're going to get the kill, right? So why would I mess around with all this nonsense when I can just walk up and stab them? And that works every time. Speaking of walking up and stabbing someone, the other conspiracy theories related to Area 51 are the development of exotic energy weapons for the Strategic Defense Initiative or other weapons programs. And over the years, I've written for you, Daven. I've written like quite a few articles about like all the various crazy ideas they've had for weapons over like the past 100 or so years. Is there any for yourself that stick out that you've either edited or researched yourself?
I don't know. I forget sometimes which ones I wrote and which ones like you or some of the others. But there was, I think, a fun one was the CIA had that poison dart gun, and if I remember, it was something to do with like a frozen projectile which has the poison in it. It would penetrate the skin but then instantly melt. Poison gets released, and now what? There's no projectile there. How did this work? And so it's almost like a good assassin weapon where it could appear that the person just had a heart attack because there's just the tiniest tiniest little thing that even a coroner might not notice, and there's no projectile left for them to find. It's just, you know, it melts, and then it just gives them a heart attack. So it seems very a natural death, and they were, I think it was the CIA was working on a weapon like that.
I remember like when they announced that, it was like the famous picture of just someone in like a court case saying, yeah, here's the heart attack gun. Well, don't worry, we never used it. And it's, how do we know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That is a type of like weaponry that fascinates me because I've, you know, watched a lot of Mythbusters, and they've done episodes where they've talked about like different uses of different bullets, like bone bullets and ice bullets, and in a similar way of like, oh, if a bone bullet like shattered within the body, would a coroner be able to find what is like the bone that doesn't belong to the person that was assassinated with that bullet? And like the coroner, when they use like a pig bullet, was able to find the pig bones on that Mythbusters episode. But just the idea of like trying to figure out like, oh, well, if we use an ice bullet, it might just melt before anyone's able to find anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting. A heart attack gun. She's terrifying.
Yeah, I also liked, I think you did one on the gun knife. It's like a knife.
Yeah.
But then it's got
the
like
knife,
a one
the knife
shot.
That is gun. It's the most Russian thing ever. Cause I don't know what it's called. Someone will know what it's called in the comments. But yeah, it's a... Like during, I think it was the Cold War, because like Russia and America in this huge like dick measuring contest about just who's the best, and they invented a knife that is a gun, and it is a knife that has a gun inside the hilt and can fire a single projectile. There's also a knife that fires the knife out of the edge as like a last minute surprise attack. So it's just the idea of like how specific a situation you need to be in for that to matter, but something that I came across in my research, and I was like, well, why do you need, like, what situation do you ever need to prepare for where you need to specifically stab someone, but they're so far away you can't stab them? And it's like, well, that's what Special Forces has to do. They're specifically called in for situations like that. And I think I wrote one for you about, like, the GIGN, maybe, who were, like, the French Special Forces who do something very similar, and they have, like, anti-terrorist ski lessons just in case they get terrorists in the Alps. Because they need to, right? Because it's like, well, why would you need to learn how to do that? Well, who else would you call? What about if there are terrorists in the Alps?
Mm.
It's similar to firefighters when they train. One of the last things a firefighter has to be able to do is, well, like, one of the things they have to train to do is they need to go to the tallest building in the city and run up it in full gear. And the taller building is, the more of a pain in the ass that is. And when they get asked, why is this case? Well, what about if there's a fire at the top of that building? We're literally the only people you can call. If we don't have people on staff who can get to the top of that building, there's no point having them. Because what about if they're the only person here when that building catches fire?
That's actually so funny. My brother is a paramedic and firefighter, and their like whole team just yesterday up and down the Space Needle. It's like 55 flights of stairs with 45-pound vests, and they did that for 2 hours straight, just up and down, just, you know, training.
They have to, right? Because what about if someone has a heart attack up there and the elevator's not working? You need to know that if you call for an ambulance, the ambulance can get there.
Yeah.
Can you not just call a crane operator at that point? Just get them in from the top.
But that's what I think in regards to weaponry, right? It's like, why do we need something this specific or for something for this obtuse a scenario? It's like, well, we're generally considered to be the last line of defense. And if that last line of defense doesn't have the weapon to take care of that, then they get through.
Yep.
So you might need a knife. I'm thinking about, that is also a gun.
Well, thinking about that knife or a sword in space, so something... People often think like they walked normally, but the NASA astronauts at least found the best thing on the moon, for instance, was to hop like a kangaroo. That was the easiest way to get around because the center of gravity was weird when you're trying to walk normal. So they would just hop around like a kangaroo. And I'm just envisioning the two sides with their, you know, swords, and they're like hopping like kangaroos just towards each other.
just bouncing from side to side. Yeah. That was another one I wrote for you years ago. It was like various moon firsts. And one of them is like, who was the first person to fall over on the moon? Because something I found out that was really, really interesting, and it just stands as testament to the size of the balls of astronauts, that they have to test for a lot of things. Obviously, these suits that they're wearing are stress tested to hell and back, but you can't plan on someone just falling over. And what about if that happens? And they were genuinely concerned that if an astronaut fell over on the moon, they'd never be able to get back up and they'd die. And some of the astronauts, when they were going up there, knew just had it in their mind that if they fell over, that just might be it. Because they might not be able to get back up, and the other astronauts were instructed not to help them in case they also got dragged down and fell down. Now imagine the level of pressure on the astronauts to do that.
An insect who's like got their airs, you know, they're on their back and they got their arms in the air and they can't turn back over. You just imagine all these astronauts laying there and NASA's just got the camera on them. I don't know, guys, what should we do?
But that's
it's like the thing they had to plan for on the back, isn't it? Yeah. Just like the other turtles just looking at it like, I'm sorry, we've got to move on.
But I remember researching that and being like, my mind was just like, oh my God. Like, of course they had to think, because I never thought of that question, but someone at NASA had to ask, well, what happens if an astronaut just eats shit? Well, they're not going to, but what about if they do? Are they going to be able to get back up? We don't know, because we don't know how gravity acts. And as you said, it's so awkward that they might not be able to. And apparently astronauts, and there's footage out there of astronauts falling over, it's hilarious. Because they fall so slowly, they have so much time to know it's happening. And, well, they can get back up by just, like, bouncing.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think another thing there, going back to the moon conspiracy things, there were literally tens of thousands of people working on this who all thought they were going to the moon, working on all of these problems. That's one of the things with researching these, as you say. The level of detail, the people they went into trying to think of every possible thing that could happen and then finding a solution and then training or making a device or whatever, it becomes like, well, okay, so if all these really intelligent engineers and all these people are working, they think they're going to the moon, and the things they're making, they have to test it to make sure it does what it says, what they think it will. At the end of the day, what they come up with will be capable of going to the moon just by their testing and everything. So why not just send them, even if they're going to make it in the first place?
And fail safes. There's documentation on what happens if an astronaut falls over on the moon, and they just start saying, "Well, we can't test for it. We're just going to have to guess that they'll get back up."
I just think as well, like, it's one of those more obvious answers of like. Similar to what I'd say with, like, why would the Russians not just, like, call out the Americans? Of same with, like, the COVID conspiracies that happened, and just, if you're trying to get tens of thousands of people to all swear to secrecy, there's gonna be a whistleblower.
Is it? Mm-hmm. Is the Benjamin Franklin quote about that right? The only way for three people to keep secrets if two of them are dead? Is it Benjamin Franklin who said that? Which is, like, as true as it ever was?
Sure. But I mean, I don't know who said the quote, but it's a very poignant one, because like the idea that thousands of government agents could all keep their lips sealed from like 1969 to now.
Well, that's the other thing is like covered in the article of the fact that the one, like, there'd have to be some proof, right? You can't, thousands, like I said, thousands, tens of thousands of people working in tandem for a singular goal. Like, deceiving the American public, not a shred of evidence, like, that's credible has ever come out, and not one person has ever had just the desire to be world famous, because you would be the most famous person on planet Earth if you announced that, and seemingly that temptation has never arose for anybody. And I don't think there's any amount of threats or coercion that could stop one person. Like, you have TikTokers, like, walking into, like, government buildings. Like, something mentioned on this page is there was a social challenge in 2019 where hundreds of people just ran into Area 51 for fun because the internet said it'd be funny.
Mostly Naruto running in there.
And they did that just because they thought it'd be funny. The only thing they gained from that is they could post about it on the internet. Someone revealing that we didn't land on the moon stands to make infinite money and be remembered for all of human history, and yet no one's taking that bait.
Well, and also when you talk about, like, the coordination, a lot of, like, the government conspiracies about all the governments are working together, this or that, and it's like, I was talking to a guy who works pretty high level of government on that, and he was like, what people don't understand about that is we can't even work together within our own offices. We're all arguing.
Yeah.
Like, to the idea that these governments around the world would all coordinate somehow, like, it's just with differing interests and everything, it just doesn't work logically.
Like, nearly every single government, like the UK government, for example, is like maybe six mainstream parties all fighting against one another and trying to dick on each other. Like, one another over at all constant times. Like, they are not working together in their own government, let alone with 200 other countries.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Even just getting, like, 10,000 people in the government to all work on the same project is, like, ridiculous. But, you know, speaking of other projects, other conspiracy theories involved, the development of weather control. And I've not written, to my knowledge, anything about that for you in the past, Dave, but I do believe that is an article you've had, right, about the idea of changing the weather. There's, like, been various attempts to control the weather throughout history, some effective, some not.
There's been some, like, with hurricanes, with seeding them with, I can't remember what, but you can, to try to slow them down. But you actually don't want to do that, because a lot of that the energy from the ocean, you'll end up just making it worse. If you could dissipate the hurricane before it hit, the next one is going to be way worse, because that energy still is there. You got to get it out. And so if you keep suppressing, eventually it'll overwhelm, and then it'll be the biggest hurricane ever. Various scientists and stuff have done lots of experiments with, like, seeding clouds and stuff like that, with different stuff. But nothing like conspiratorial per se. It's just, I mean, these are people who are publishing their research, you know. So
yeah, you can just read it for free on the internet. And I think the Beijing Olympics, for example. Like, China used some sort of weather control technology to, like, dissipate clouds, because that's the thing you can do. They were just, like, shooting chemicals into the sky to dissipate clouds, so a cloud cover wouldn't affect the Olympics.
Temporary measure, right?
One of them, I wish I could remember the thing exactly, but there is a substance that you could seed into the atmosphere, which very quickly would make an ice age, basically, on Earth. And I was just thinking, like, you always have these movie plots where the evil villain's going to destroy Earth. And, like, this is one someone, I think, I did the math on the thing, and I think it was only, you only needed a couple $1 million worth of that substance, and then some jets to go distribute it around the Earth. And that's that. Like, there's not much we could do about it at that point. And it's never been the movie plot, but it would work as, like, the villain's going to launch this up. But it's something that any billionaire or a sufficiently wealthy human could just do. And, you know, let's just destroy all life.
For
that's
no reason.
Not far off, like, an actual early plot of a villain from One Piece, where he is a sandman controlling a desert that puts chemicals into the atmosphere to stop it raining and depowering him. Like, that is literally anime villain level shit if someone decided to do that.
Yeah, it reminds me a few years ago where, like, every flight out of Heathrow, I think, like, one of the busiest airports in the world, was grounded because one guy just flew a drone sort of nearby the airport.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing that on the news and thinking, why do people bother, like, blowing up planes when they could just fly a drone sort of nearby an airport from, like, 2 miles away and ground every, like, plane out of there? And the fact that that's not a thing, I remember, like, querying this out loud in a video once and thinking, Am I just being stupid? But why is that not just a thing people are doing all the time? Like, why is like Just Stop Oil not constantly doing that?
Don't give them ideas.
That's
Scott.
The thing. But I felt like I was being given an idea, but it seems so obvious. Of like, it was on the news, like 2-3 days straight. Of it was worldwide news. Like every flight out of Heathrow was stopped for one drone.
Well, and that's where I think a lot of people, with all the conspiracies and stuff, like most humans, clearly, there's all these things we could do like this, but nobody does it because most people are pretty decent. Like, you know, you got the bad egg out there, but they're not, you know. And also when you talk about the global things, it's like, yeah, someone could make this global catastrophe, but they live here too. And so do their families. They don't want that to happen. And the same with governments. Like, if we knew that aliens were coming, the governments would want all the funding to be able to develop technologies, and that because they live here too, and their power is going to be disabled as well if aliens are coming and these sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, yeah, speaking of which, go on, Lucas.
I was going to say there are people of obviously, like, you know, high levels of power in the world, but there are also like a lot of people that maybe think like, yeah, everyone's just kind of trying to get by, right? Like most people in the world are just trying to keep to themselves and trying to just live day to day and not cause world-ending problems is the actual answer. Yeah, you're right, David.
I do think, though, to those very telling articles about like billionaires who were like asking futurists to come up with ways they could pay their staff in the event of a worldwide catastrophe, because they're like, they're building underground bunkers that they could potentially go to in the event of an apocalypse, but they don't know how they could convince their staff to not immediately turn on them if money is no longer a thing that matters. And they're asking futurists to come up with ways that they can avoid just their entire staff mutiny instantly.
The answer is that COVID taught us they'd fire us all straight away.
Build a better... But then it's like, what about you? So like, you need someone to run the power. In like, even if you've got like a closed off private bunker, you're gonna need someone to maintain it. You're gonna need someone to like sort your plumbing out.
Don't worry, AI will have that in 10 years.
I found those articles really interesting.
That's where you have the even the people in power who might, you know, be doing these horrible things. It's like they'll stay in power if there's more stability. Less stability, then they might be ousted and someone else. So they would rather there be more stability. And when you're thinking about like, oh, well, I could destroy all these people, it's like, well, then who's going to pick up my trash, you know, from the street and everything. And so you kind of need everyone. So maybe we'll just keep society mostly as it is today, very stable and, you know, reasonably stable and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's what I found interesting about those articles. Like I said, they're asking futurists of like, what do we do if like the world ends and I can't get someone to like, you know, clean my underground bunker because money's not a thing anymore. And he's like,
You have your defense staff there. Why they'll probably just, as you reference, like just shoot the rich person. All right, now I'm going to invite my families to this cool underground bunker that we have now.
Yeah, ultimately, the thing that the most powerful and richest people want is to maintain the status quo and just shift it in their direction, like 1%.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Just a little bit. And speaking of shifting things in like their own direction, like the last thing here that I think would be potentially interesting to talk about is that one of the proposed conspiracy theories about Area 51 is that it is the place where they are developing experimental time travel and teleportation technology. Which I think as of like this week, there was like some scientist somewhere was like, oh, we teleported matter, right?
Wait, what?
Only like a little bit. A little bit.
Yeah, and like, hang on, what?
Yeah. And time travel is like, technically what? A thing. Because like if you just go into space, we talked a lot about space, you want to come across it in your travels and research, Dave, and of going into space, you are technically traveling through time a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're like the GPS satellites. They have to update them constantly for the time because everyone uses them for ultra-precise timekeeping, but they're going so much faster. So you have relativity kicking in, and so they have to kind of adjust the clocks each time because you can sort of time travel that way. But I think one thing that always gets me on movies and things when people do time travel is your time travel device would also need to be a spaceship because the Earth is moving so fast. Yeah. First, it's spinning. Then you're going around the sun. I can't remember the numbers, but then the whole our whole solar system is orbiting around the center of the Milky Way very quickly, and then our whole Milky Way is moving. And so if you even go 1 second in time, either direction, you're going to be way out in space somewhere. And so you have to either calculate that where it can also sort of teleport you to where the Earth would be, and that exact spot. If you're even off just a tiny bit, you're in the Earth or you're out in space. Movies with time travel never deal with that. Like, you got to Back to the Future. The second they go back in time, they're, 100,000 light years away or something like that from Earth, and just
but they locked in the coordinates, right? It's fine. It's going to be okay.
Yeah. So I remember, in regards to time travel, one of the articles I remember really enjoying researching is, who first proposed the idea of using time travel to go back and kill Hitler? Because I found that interesting. Like, that is it's a very popular trope, but someone has to have come up with it first.
Was it Hitler?
No, but the fact that someone came up with it while Hitler was still in power.
Oh, shit.
And it was that early.
It would be such a bad idea, though, because if you think of World War II and all the millions of deaths, and how even just one death can markedly change history, especially because the DNA of everyone changes pretty quickly along the way, and events and things. So you think about something like World War II, if you prevented that in the way, or even just delayed it a year, or these sorts of things, all of us today probably wouldn't be here. It would just be someone else here.
So I found fascinating. Arguments against it.
Yeah, I was going to say, as awful as, obviously World War II was, the idea that we've never had a world war since kind of would insinuate the idea that, okay, it took two whole world wars, quote-unquote, there's been many wars, but it would take two wars of that scale to kind of teach humanity to learn the lesson a little bit, and maybe if the second one didn't happen, then it would just happen further down the line.
Yeah, and as Dave alluded to, mentioned, something I came across while I was researching the article is the idea of the grandfather paradox, which is if you go back in time and kill your own grandfather. Because the theory is, one of the theories is that even if you did go back and try and kill Hitler, it wouldn't work, because the moment that you did, it's such a monumental moment in history that you would instantly cease to exist. And if you cease to exist, then you wouldn't have existed to go back in time and stop him.
That's the paradox, right?
The sort of funniest one, I think, is that I think there's a movie about time or something that sort of deals with it. And so when you have guys, you have a guy, you have billions of sperm, right? And every sort of release of that, now new ones are created. And so that one little sperm is the one that wins to make that person. So if you change the slightest, tiniest little thing in the person, maybe they just, did something different that day or 1 hour, you could change which sperm wins on their kids, and then their kids are different, and then, as you say, it just quickly goes out from there. So it's the tiniest little thing where in that movie, I think he couldn't go back before any of his kids were born. He could go back in time, but the second he went back before, if he changed even the tiniest little thing, just someone was 10 seconds off from being here or whatever, it changed everything else, like when they, have sex or whatever, and then the different sperm wins, and so his kids would be different or not there at all. So he could only ever go back in time up to the point where this kid was born. Otherwise, he loses the kid he knows. The kid is just gone, and it's maybe a different kid or maybe no kid. And I think that's also something that's the slightest little thing, especially with guys. It's now your kids are different. Now everything is different.
Yeah, which is
quite Marty McFly going back to the Future. Is he comes back and he has the same family, but he doesn't have the same family. He has the successful family.
Well, that's something we talked about. It was on Fact Fiend years ago now, but it's the original actor who was cast to play Marty McFly was fired in part because he refused to play it as a comedy. Because every time he got asked, "Hey, can you lighten it up a little bit? It's a comedy." And he's like, "No, it's not. This is a horror movie." "No, it's not a horror movie. It's a dumb comedy." And he's like, "No, it's not. It's a comedy. It's a horror." "What do you mean it's a horror movie?" He's like, "Well, Marty McFly is going back to a future that's not his own. Mm-hmm. They're not his parents. They look like them. They act like them, but they're not his parents. They're not the parents he grew up with. They're not the parents he knew. That's horrifying." And the director went, "Look, it's just a movie. Calm down."
And it's Eric Stoltz.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was just going to look it up there. Yeah, he got fired because he just kept saying it's a horror movie. And it's like, "It's not that serious, Eric. Just play it like a comedy." And he's like, "No."
It's like, take it for what the script is, but if you actually take a moment to think about it, it's like, he doesn't go back to his family. He goes back to an entirely different set of people that just look like his family.
Well, and that movie only works because it's sort of a comedy like that, because if you actually took it seriously, there's so many flaws, but it's fine because it does not take itself seriously, and so you don't really take it seriously that way when watching it. It's just a fun ride type of movie. Mm-hmm.
The scariest thing is, honestly, like one of the things that you never stop to think about is, what's like Marty McFly's dad thinking when, in that universe, because that's the universe where he met Marty McFly when he was a kid, and like his wife was kind of into him. He grows up and his son grows up to look exactly like his wife's high school boyfriend.
They also give it the same name and everything.
Same name, right? Is that like, not going to be like a little bit suspicious when he's like...
Is that not the most red of red flags?
That like his son looks exactly like his wife's high school boyfriend. All right, I think the other one last like movie theory I remember for... Well, an article I researched for you ages ago, for I think it's about the making of the Terminator, is there's a very persistent fan theory that I try and bring up as much as I can because it's fascinating. Because you mentioned like the whole thing about like the sperm and the egg of changing like just one microsecond off, you might create an entirely different child. Is there's a theory that when Michael Biehn gets sent back to protect Sarah Connor, and then they, you know, get together, and that's what gives birth to John Connor. So, well, how did they know they'd go back at the exact right time to create the version of John Connor that exists in the future? There's a, right at the start of the film, it's like a blink you'd miss it moment. You hear on the phone as like Linda Hamilton, Sarah Connor's leaving her apartment, there's a guy calling about arranging like a second date or something like that. And the theory is that he's John Connor's dad. Because she's already pregnant when the movie starts. And it doesn't matter whether or not she ends up sleeping with Michael Biehn when he goes back. It just matters that she survives. Because that she's already pregnant. And he's John Connor's dad. And because he goes back after that's already happened, it won't interfere with her giving birth to the right version of John Connor. The version he's going to grow up to become.
I still would argue that either way, it's very strange. Because whether he's the actual dad or not, John Connor still gives him a picture of his mum, like, you're going to bang her one day.
Yeah.
You're going to bang my mum one day.
But like, he didn't specifically say you've got to have sex at exactly this moment. Your boys are exactly this temperature, because that would otherwise throw off the temperature inside your balls and the wrong sperm will make it.
He did let him become infatuated with his mother through like one Polaroid for years upon years, so that he would then go back and sleep with his own mum. It's like, oh,
it is weird, but I've always liked that theory that she's already pregnant, and it's mentioned that like the fixed point in time, like, and when they ask the question of, well, why couldn't they just send back a Terminator before then? So, well, they could, but that'd be too far back, and the version of John Connor they're trying to kill wouldn't exist. And the version of Sarah Connor they're trying to kill maybe wouldn't exist. Like, that's the fixed point in time where they can never go back before that. And it explains why so many plot holes.
They could also just kill Sarah Connor as a baby. They probably could, right?
They probably could have.
It's the same as, like, the Terminator Dark Fate opening, where, like...
They sent a second Terminator back 5 seconds just, later.
Yeah, 5 seconds later, just kill him again. It's like, oh, okay.
They sent another one back.
And it's the most efficient thing to do. It's what you would do if you were like, I can't even remember.
If you were Skynet, right? You just send another
one
back.
That's the one, yeah. You just send multiple Terminators at the same time and be like, yeah, job's a good one.
Well, the funniest one we talked about is the T-1000, right? Of, they had to write a book. I think it's a novelization, maybe a comic book. But they had to establish why they didn't send another one back, because people kept asking, like, it's the single most effective thing they have in that universe. Like, why bother sending back the TX when the T-1000 is unstoppable? And they wrote in a comic or a novel somewhere that, yeah, the T-1000s are so smart that the moment Skynet turned them on, they immediately just went rogue and ran away. And that's why they never sent another one back, ever, because they're just too good.
It's like Skynet's terrified of making another T-1000, so they just never did.
Because they always go sentient, and they decide that, oh, Skynet sucks, I'm going to just join the humans. which is a conversation for another day. But like, Davin, thank you very much for joining us on this very special episode. It does feel weird that we invited you on to talk about conspiracy theories, largely. Well, they do tend to do quite well online. And when I know we have researched, like, to, like, you know, separately and while collaborating, like me writing, you editing for me, like, they do tend to be articles and videos that do very well, especially the debunking ones. And we have debunked many conspiracy theory over on Today I Found Out.
Well, and then most of the time, it is really easy when you just look into it, because most people don't look into it and they're like, oh, actually, that conspiracy kind of makes sense. And then you actually look, like you say, and it's like, oh, it's one guy who didn't make any sense, but then people, you know, blew up the idea. And it, but the second you look into it, it's just like, oh, well, that's obviously false.
Like, a lot of them do fall apart of like the slightest bit of scrutiny, which is why it's so fascinating. And when I do the research for you, it's like, really? Just one guy, one guy wrote a book, one guy, and that started it all. And
well, like
still,
the videos of the flat earthers disproving themselves and just not knowing what to say.
Yeah, like live on air. We just like that got started. That was like a Facebook group, I think. Just one. There's like a H Bomber Guy video about it. I think just one guy again just started all that, which just I find it. In a way, it's horrifying, but also in another way, it's also quite, I think not, what's the opposite of horrifying? So I don't want to say it's not horrifying, but just the idea that
inspirational,
that one person can make a difference, that one person can introduce an idea that can survive for hundreds of years. It's just a shame that the ideas that they're like sharing are stupid. But it is like inspirational, right? Just one guy's like, you know what? I've got a feeling, you know what? I think that we didn't land on the moon. Because that's the thing as well, when I research all these things, the number one, like, just connective thread between all of them is just someone having a feeling. Like the lady who started the conspiracy that Shakespeare didn't write his own plays. It wasn't based on anything. It was just based on her going, well, he wrote a lot. I don't think he did it. But he wrote them. We've got his signature and, like, there's proof he existed. Yeah, but I just don't think he did it. And that was it. That was enough to start that conspiracy theory. One person, I don't think he did it.
Oh, man. A little bit.
Yeah. And that's just something you'll learn if you just go out there, if you research. Just a little bit. Or, what, you know, watch videos as seen on Today I Found Out.
Yeah, we got one on the moon landing one. We got one. It's about an hour long by an engineer. He's really good with this sort of things. And he just goes into
seeing that one, yeah.
So yeah, we can cover like all the ways it doesn't make sense, the conspiracy, but he does that too, but then he dives into the actual science of like, no, and we can even, I mean, if you got a sufficiently, you don't even need that powerful laser pointer. You can point it at the moon. You point it at the right spot. You're going to get a ping back because we put a mirror there. And that's just something anybody can do.
Yeah. You can see it, right, as well. Like, you can just, a sufficiently powerful telescope, you can just look and you can just see, I think you can even see the point where the footprints are still there. And that's also how they discovered that the flags fell down, which is funny.
Other nations have done, like, probes. I think Japan did one recently where you can still see the flag, you know, a couple of the flags standing, that sort of thing. You can see the, so it's like, yeah, we have pictures of it. And it's another nation, it's sort of an independent party, which, again, would be like, whoa, U.S., there's nothing there. We just looked. What are you, so, yeah.
It's a grand conspiracy, though. Everyone's in on it.
Which, again, is quite inspirational. Like, it's horrifying, but also, if that conspiracy theory were true, it does mean we can work together. We can work together, all as a species. Like, collectively, we can all work towards a singular goal, but the conspiracy theorists think we're only doing that to, like, you know, tell people that the Earth is flat or that we didn't land on the moon. Instead of, like,
much, like, maybe more proven in human history than anything else, it's that the entire world cannot work together.
Yeah, exactly.
Unfortunately, as much as I wish we could, we can't cooperate.
What is the single,
very well.
Like, it's the single number one thing that always makes them fall apart of the fact that for it to work, for most of the conspiracy theories to be true, it relies on a bunch of people working together and never disagreeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and usually many thousands of people as well involved, and it's just like, yeah, that doesn't scale. It doesn't work.
No.
Again, I wish it would, but it doesn't.
Oh, it can. That's the inspirational, hopeful message we'll end on, Lucas. That maybe the conspiracy theorists are right and people can work together.
Maybe.
thank you for joining us, Dave, and go check out all the links you can find below.
Yeah, it's been excellent having you. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you, guys.